This is the SF Signal Podcast. I am your host. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award winner. Thanks to all of you. And tonight, I have a very special guest. This is an author in his own right. He's written a ton of stuff, and he just did a Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter funded, and that was awesome. Of course, I'm talking about Michael J. Sullivan.
Hi, this is Michael J. Sullivan, as he just mentioned. I'm the author of the Rye-Ira Revelations and the Rye-Ira Chronicles, and now the upcoming science fiction future time travel thriller Hollow World.
Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So this Hollow World, that was a little bit different for you.
Yeah. Well, I first started, I actually wrote a number of different books in a number of different genres, and it wasn't until I wrote the fantasy series Rye-Ira Revelations that I actually got published. So that was the first one that stuck. So from that point on, everyone assumed I was a fantasy author, but that's really not necessarily where I had aimed for, but that's where I ended up. So this idea came along, and I don't really write for a particular genre. I just write what, you know, great stories that pop into my head. So whatever it was, it just, this one happened to turn out to be kind of a classic science fiction.
That's awesome, though. I like it when authors write what they want to write.
Yeah, I learned that that's kind of the only way to succeed, because I was always trying to write, you know, the great American novel, or the ones that, you know, I thought that people would want to buy, or that I thought would win awards. And when I finally, after trying for, 20 years of that, I finally gave up. And it wasn't until I completely gave up and said, you know, forget it. I'm just going to write what I want to write. I want to write what I want to read, what I wasn't seeing out there on the shelves. And I thought, oh, that's what I want to write, because that's what I want to, you know, I wasn't even going to publish it. I was going to put it out for free and just let my friends read it. And then it turns out that a lot of people liked it. So I took it to an agent, and they actually picked it up eventually.
Now, you were able to do something a little bit different. That's almost kind of like a hybrid, because you sold print rights, but you held on to audio and ebook rights.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to kind of make – there are a lot of things that you want to do to be more flexible, particularly for your fans. Like, for instance, some of the things I wanted to retain with the ebook rights was the ability to be like, for instance, you can do – what I did with this book was I made it so that there's two books in one in the ebook, for instance. You can actually have it with or without profanity. Mm-hmm. So you can actually, you know, change it up and pick whichever one you want. I also have one so that if you buy the print book, you can get the ebook free, which is something I've always wanted to do, because I'd rather have people, you know, buy another one of my books or another author's books rather than having to spend money to buy two different versions of the book they've already purchased. I think if they've already bought it, they don't need to buy it again just because they want to have it on their Kindle. Because some people would like to have, you know, a pristine book on their shelf sometimes and then read the ebook. And
that's,
I think,
me.
That's fine. Yeah, and that's good. And I don't think it's really fair to actually force people to actually buy it twice. I mean, you already bought it. You already paid me. Sure, you can have it. It doesn't cost anything to give you the ebook. So that's kind of what I wanted to do. And you won't get that through traditional publishers. So that was one of the reasons why I wanted to retain the ebook rights, because I wanted to make sure that I could do things like that. So like Amazon has a feature for called Matchbook where they do that, but a lot of the publishers weren't willing to go ahead with that. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to keep it. And so when I went to Tachyon, they were able to Brandon Sanderson actually got a print-only deal through them, which is what caused me to think about them to begin with. And they actually were one of the ones that actually I could get a print-only deal through, which was really great. So I managed to retain those ebook rights.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It just gives you more control over what you can do. And I prefer to do things that actually make, you know, the readers like me as opposed to dislike me.
Sure. Well, that's awesome. And Tachyon has done a lot of good stuff. So, I mean, it's not like it's an unknown publisher. They're pretty well established.
Oh, yeah. They've got quite a few awards. And like I said, they've got a few big authors that they've dealt with before. So, yeah, I was very pleased when we made the deal with them.
Very cool. And you also did a Kickstarter element.
Yeah, we launched that kind of more of as an experiment to see what that was like. Because I'd heard a lot about it, and I wanted to figure out, you know, what would that be like, and would we be able to make any money doing it, and how would it work? So we actually put that out. I think that was last March. We had it during the month of March last year. And we aimed at making I was hoping to make 3,000. I figured it would cost about 6,000 to make the book right, because we were getting, you know, top of the line people. We had Mark Simonetti from France as the artist for the cover, and we had we were getting Betsy Mitchell to do the editing. So we had some big names who were going to be working on the book, and I wanted to pay them, you know, going rate and everything. So to do that, we figured it would cost us about 6,000. So I was figuring I would try and raise 3,000 in order to make sure it funded, and then I would cover the cost of the other half of it, and then that's what I put the book out in. But as it turned out, I end up pulling in more than 30,000.
Wow.
So we kind of overdid it. But, you know, it was good because those people got the book almost, what was it, like 9 months, I think, in advance of everyone else. So they were very happy with that. And I don't think anyone's been too disappointed in what they got.
That's awesome. Is there something in particular that you think you can owe that success to on that Kickstarter? Because obviously that's not the norm.
Yeah, I've been puzzling over that myself. I'm not exactly sure, but it seems like I've obviously had something that people wanted at a price that they thought was good enough to get. So, but I'm not sure, because a lot of the people who bought in on the Kickstarter were not fans of mine. Most of them had never read me before. So I was rather surprised by that, because I thought maybe my earlier fan base was moving that. But I don't really think that was it, because I actually got a lot of new readers through Kickstarter, because that group of people actually were, you know, finding me for the first time, which is another kind of a cool side benefit of Kickstarter.
Absolutely. So Hollow World, you know, for the benefit of our listeners, why don't you tell folks what's your pitch here? What's it about?
Okay, so it's a classic time travel novel in a sense that it's about kind of an average nerdy guy who stumbles on a secret of time travel and flees forward time travel. It's kind of like, you know, the H.G. Wells novel, if you've read that. I don't know if you have.
Morlocks, not Morlocks.
Exactly. So it's kind of character-based rather than hard science-based. It deals with a guy who's dreamed of, you know, doing something great with his life, but his life, real life, kind of got in the way all the time. And, you know, he discovers he's dying, and he decides to take this wild gamble on the future, hoping it'll have some cure or solution to his problem. Only when he gets there, he discovers it's something completely different than he ever imagined. So I kind of got this idea when I was reading Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, and when I read it, I really didn't think that the future that he described was really all that dystopic, even though that's kind of how he intended it, I think. Mm-hmm. And that got me wondering, it got me thinking about like changing norms and values. And I kind of thought, if you brought a person who was like a Roman soldier back in the time of the Roman Empire, and you brought him to modern day, he might really hate today because, well, for one thing, I mean, Rome's no longer a superpower, and that right there might bum him out. But then I started thinking about, okay, so what would happen if someone from our age went and actually found a true utopia? Would we recognize it? Would we even appreciate it? And this led me to thinking about all kinds of things, like we dream of a future where there's no war or famine or death or racism or class warfare and that kind of thing. And I finally wondered if I could write a novel that explores all this, but in a way that allows the reader to kind of decide for themselves whether the future is a dystopic one or a utopic one. So my hope was that it becomes sort of a Rorschach test for readers, and when they read it, you know, they bring their own perspective to the story and walk away with different views. So there's many things in the book that I avoid defining, but which readers kind of invariably do themselves, even without knowing it. Like there's one character, for example, is never defined as either male or female, and yet everyone who reads it decides that, and you'll see it in their reviews, or they'll talk to them and say, well, he, I mean, oh, so you thought it was a he. And so it depends on how they read the book and what their attitudes are as to how they interpret things. But so it's a book that was designed to kind of promote kind of deep thoughts and kind of bring people's own opinions out. But it's also has an exciting murder mystery as well that kind of keeps the plot moving.
Very cool. And now you said this is different from the stuff you've written before, or at least the stuff you've published before. What was the genesis for this story? I mean, what made you decide you wanted to go in this direction?
Well, like I said, I like just good stories. I like things that I enjoy reading. And this is more of a kind of the classic kind of old world, old school. Because like right now, I think science fiction has kind of turned into either, you know, epic space operas or, you know, hard science kind of military fiction, which is really the popular thing. And this was really more of a society style science fiction story. It's more of a thinking style story. So that was what I liked. And like I said, I was reading the Aldous Huxley thing, and that's what really got me interested in this, is could I create this world where when people read it, they really wouldn't, you know, it would depend on what kind of person you are, how, whether you think it's utopic or dystopic. And I was trying to figure, could I actually build that kind of book that balanced that edge so that people would in some cases fall one way or in some cases fall another. In fact, if I wrote it and everyone thought it was one way, I would be kind of disappointed. And I, so far, the reaction has been pretty good, because I'll talk to people and I'll ask them, you know, do you like the future I've done, or do you dislike it? And some people say, oh God, it's a hellish place. And they're like, oh, I would love to live there. And it's like, oh, okay, so I'm hitting that pretty good. So that was kind of the intent, and I think I've managed to nail that pretty well.
Very cool. Now, is you keep saying that this is the classic kind of science fiction story. Is there a type of science fiction story that you yourself like to read?
Well, yeah, this is the kind of thing. What don't I say that I actually is kind of bad, because I'm actually remembering like old science fiction movies rather than some novels.
Well,
that
what are the movies? What are the movies?
I actually don't remember. I remember there was this great one where this guy he gets these messages or something, and he gets these pieces, and he has to build this machine which would teleport him to another world. And I thought that was great, because he's kind of like this average kind of guy, but he builds all these pieces, and it's an intelligence test by an alien race to see if he's smart enough, and then they bring him to their world. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was kind of a neat thing. That's kind of one of the concepts I had with this book, was that the main character is, I mean, he's intelligent, obviously. He's an MIT graduate, and he has some, you know, knowledge. But, I mean, he's not working for a corporation. He builds this thing kind of in his garage. Mm-hmm. So he's just like the average guy who builds a time machine, and then he uses that to go on this great adventure, more along the lines of the H.G. Wells story, where the guy builds it and he has his friends come over and says, I'm going to show you time travel. And boom, off he goes. And there's not a lot of thought about it. And so it's more character-based. It's more character-driven. It's not about the science. It's not about the gadgetry. It's not about, big dramatic races and things along those lines. It's more about, an individual person and how his relationships change, and then, of course, how society has changed and how he has to then deal with that or view that. And I think it works in a way that really hopefully will make people look at what we have today and what could be in the future based off the decisions we're making now. And that's kind of the thing I was trying to go for.
Interesting. So it's almost like you've brought it down to a smaller story, but it still has grand kind of scale to it.
Yeah, it's really a kind of a murder mystery, really, in the essence of the plot. But it addresses, religion, politics, and racism,
barbecue,
sexism, and probably barbecue. All those wonderful things that no one wants to talk about. But hopefully I've done it in such a way. And so far the reviews have indicated that I succeeded in not doing it in a preachy style, or not even picking one side or the other. It's just presenting new ideas in ways that hopefully will make people go, I hadn't thought of that before. But, it's not designed to offend anyone in particular.
Very cool. Now,
I designed to offend everyone equally, is what
right.
I mean.
Well, I always tell people that's what Archer's all about. You know, Archer offends everybody equally. I don't know if you've ever seen that show. I don't mean to keep like hammering on the subject. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit tired, but I find it interesting that you turned down the big traditional six kind of offer to go with Tachyon for this.
Actually, this book was first, because I have read a first refusal with Orbit, and because they did the big series, and they read it, and they passed on it, not because they didn't like it. My editor actually did like it, but she didn't feel that the story being a, kind of traditional science fiction story would sell, because that's not what the market's doing right now. Mm. As I said, it's all military fiction and it's all space opera, but there's nothing along the lines of traditional old-fashioned science fiction. And so they didn't think that it would be a good viable market.
Is that Davey?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other one was we had another offer from another publisher, but again, it was going to be something where I'd have to give up the ebook rights, and I didn't want to do that since I wasn't going to be going through my publisher, which they, I wanted to stick with them because they're the ones I work with. But if it wasn't going to be them, that I thought, well, I'm just going to hang on to the publishing rights. And what I really wanted to do is I wanted to get into bookstores. Mm-hmm. So I really did want to try and get a print-only deal. So that's what I pushed for, and that's what I ended up getting.
Well, and don't get me wrong. I'm just super impressed. And I'm
with which?
what? No, number one, that you had a definite idea in mind of what you wanted, and you didn't compromise. You know, you went out and you found that deal, and you made that happen. And you did it from the perspective of you, which you keep saying, you wanted to do this for the readers and for the fans and for people to be able to, you know, not have to buy the book in two different formats or three or whatever. You know, so I'm that's very impressive. You don't hear about that every day.
Yeah, I mean, like I didn't have like DRM on it. I mean, because I actually have some notes in the book, in the beginning of the book, one on privacy or piracy, one on the profanity, and one on the free ebook and the profanity. You know, so I wanted to let people know that, you know, I'm not in favor of piracy, but I understand that it's, you know, that's something I can do much about, so it's not going to bother me either. I mean, in many respects, it helps promote the book to some degree. And you know, if people are going to do that, fine. I'm not going to be all that bent out of shape about it. But so I have notes in there about that, and things like that are some things that I don't think you really could get going through traditional publishing. So I kind of wanted to make sure that I did this one the way I wanted to do it.
Understood. Now, is this available right now as we're recording this, or is it coming out later?
Okay, so it is available both in some places. It's not in bookstores yet. It's supposed to have been released on April 15th, but a few people have jumped the gun. So you can get it on like Amazon, and you can get it, I believe, through the big three in ebook form. But I think you can actually get it in print and ebook. But if you're going to be getting it at the bookstores, I think they're still being shipped. So it might be popping up sporadically in different places. And if you're going to be picking up in, you know, the UK, they're going to be delayed because it's being shipped overseas. So, but most places, yeah, you can get it right now.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the Orbit books for a second, you know, because we have a lot of people who like you know, the epic fantasy kind of stuff. Why don't you give the quick overview on that?
All right, so there's the original series, which is Rite of Revelations, which is about two thieves. One's more of a mercenary, one's more a professional thief. And they have sort of an interesting relationship because one is somewhat idealistic, and the other one is very skeptical and cynical. So it's kind of like old traditional heroic meets, you know, modern day, you know, cynicism. But that story begins with two thieves who are hired to steal a sword to prevent a guy from having a duel with a guy who's going to kill him. They go in to steal the sword, and they discover instead the body of the king and realize they've been set up to take the fall for the murder. And this is part of a conspiracy that is that grows into a whole, you know, what was originally a six-book series but was released through Orbit as three omnibus books. So that really launched that entire series, which is pretty elaborate. But to describe that, I mean, it's well over 700.
Well, you also have to spell.
Oh, right. Yes.
Raira,
which Raira is particularly good because that's how you contact me if you want to look up my website, which is RIYRIA.com if you wanted to go there. So Raira is how it's pronounced. But yes. And those are all in Audible books, and they do very well in Audible books because they're narrated by Tim Gerard Reynolds, who is a wonderful narrator. And if anyone wanted to actually listen to a sample, you know, they don't have to buy anything because I've got there's two free short stories that you can download right off of Audible, which is The Viscount and the Witch and The Jester. And there's also extended previews for Hollow World, which you can get off of Amazon or some of the other sites. So, I mean, all those things are out there that you can pick up and take samples. You don't have to spend a penny until you decide whether you want to read it or not. But that book's about the Rite of Revelations was about, you know, it's a fun story. It has some humor in it. It also has some dark sides to it. One person once I generally don't care for the more the dark or the grim dark that tends to be in fantasy these days. And one person, one of my fans goes, well, what are you talking about? Because you killed off like half of your character. So I had to sit down and I had to add it up and I went, you know, you're right. I actually do. But there's enough humor in the story and there are portions in the world that are nice versus portions of the world bad. It seems like a lot of them are just really, really dark and there's like no place in the world seems really nice and there's no real nice people in it. So I don't have that. But it's kind of a happy, fun, it's an easy read, it's something that you can pick up. And there is no profanity in that series, which is why when I made Hollow World, and there is profanity because the characters takes place in modern day, and the characters, you know, require that sort of thing. So when I did that one, I wanted to make it, because a lot of people wrote to me and they really liked the fact there was no profanity in the original book. There was no, you know, heavy sex, no really gory murder scenes in that. So I wanted to give some of my fans the chance to not have to, you know, because they didn't like that, I wanted to make sure that they had the opportunity to not have to have the heavy profanity if they didn't want it.
So you mentioned the audiobooks, and so the this Epic Fantasy series, those are all in audio. You also did Hollow World in audio.
Yeah. The original series, let's see, which one was it? I forget which book it was, but it was actually up for an Audible, an Audi. We actually went to New York. It's pretty, very fun. It was like the, you know, the Oscars. But yeah, so Hollow World is also up. I did that one through Jonathan Davis, who is a great narrator. He's done all kinds of stuff. He's had done award-winning things. He's done like some of the Star Wars, you know, work. So he was a good choice to go with for a science fiction story. And I actually got to sit in and actually kind of direct him a little bit when he was. We sat in for 2-day session, and I was actually
going
through
and say,
hey, no, you got to. The emphasis is on the word "the," or you know, no, that voice isn't right. Try a different one. And so,
no, there's more apostrophes in the name.
No, yeah, exactly.
Well, and that's part of, you know, having the control as the author. You do be able to get to do a little bit more on the audio side, right?
Yeah. Well, that was the kind of nice thing. I actually had input on who we picked, and because I got to listen to several different samples, and I was able to pick the one I wanted. And I mean, this is no slight to Tim Reynolds either. But, I mean, Tim's like the voice of Ryer, and he'll always will be, because I'm very pleased with what he does. And in fact, I met him because he was at Recorded Books when we were recording Hollow World, and I ran into him, and it was great. And he knows Dave Jonathan, and so everyone was all cool with that, which is good, because I didn't want him to be mad. And so yeah, I got to actually sit in. I got to meet with him. We went out to have coffee the day before and talk about the characters, which was great. And I got to, you know, introduce him to the world. And then we got to sit in and sit with the engineer as he went through the whole book. And it was kind of fun because he would sit there and he'd go, hmm. And I go, what? He goes, well, I don't understand about this part. And it was like, well, yeah, that's right. The authors in the air. Just ask him. Like, this is great. I'm not used to having the author sitting here.
That is awesome. Well, that's so cool. Good for you.
Thank you.
Alrighty, so you mentioned the website. What else can people see there? Do you have like a con schedule? Are you going to be signing books anywhere? Are you going to do a book tour? Where can people see you in person if they want to?
In person? Well, let's see. I'm going to be a presenter at the Writer Digest Annual Conference in New York in August.
Nice.
I'm doing a TED Talk in November in California. I forget exactly what the city is, though. And I'm going to be in, let's see, I'll probably be going, I forget which one it is, but it's WorldCon or World Fantasy Con. It's being held in D.C. this year.
That's World Fantasy.
Yeah, so I'll probably be going to that since it's in my backyard.
Okay.
But those are the only things that I've got slated for the remainder of this year that I know of. I mean, things may pop up, but that, yeah, you'll find on my website, you'll find my, you know, where I'll be appearing and so on and so forth.
At World Fantasy, are you going to take part in the giant book signing thing that they usually do?
I have no idea yet.
Okay.
I do not have any plan. I know I'll be going. I may not even be a presenter there. I may just be going.
Okay.
But if I am, it'll probably be showing up on my website.
Okay. So if someone does want to get signed copies, because that's a question that comes up, do they do that through your website? Is there specific stores they can go to?
Yeah, they'll be going through the website to get signed copies. And that's I've done that for a while now. It's not, I mean, most people should know that if they're just listening to me for the first time, obviously they wouldn't. But yeah, you can go to the website and you can find ways to order and get nice signed copies of a variety of the books and variety of forms, I think.
Very cool. And are you on social media? Are you doing Twitter and Facebook?
Yeah, Twitter, Facebook, Reddit. Let's see, Goodreads. I'm pretty much all over the map.
Find that through your website, or do you have a different Twitter handle, or what are you doing?
Yeah, you can probably find the website. What's my Twitter handle?
Author_Sullivan.
Yeah, author_Sullivan. I have it auto log in, so I have no idea.
That's okay. That might be something you want to write down.
Yeah, if I ever switch machines.
Well, Michael, this has been a lot of fun. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners before I let you go?
No, that sounds like about everything we've covered. I just, you know, hopefully people will take a chance on an old style fantasy science fiction book, and hopefully they'll enjoy it as much as I enjoyed writing it.
Very cool. What's next for you?
I'm working on a new trilogy. I'm actually on the third book of a 3-book trilogy. I don't ever release the first book. I don't even submit it to the publisher until they're all done, because I have a tendency to go back and forth. And, you know, I get to the end of the third book, I may want to change something in the beginning of the first book in order to, you know, accommodate for it. So if I don't know how ever, you know, J.K. Rowling ever put it up on the shelf. And then, like, she's working on the last book and thinking, oh, my God, if I could have just changed paragraph 4 in book 1, it would be so much better. And I'm terrified of that. So I wait till they get the whole thing done. So I'm almost done with the third book. And when I do that, then I'll start editing it and I'll start submitting it and see how that goes.
Very cool. Now, Davy insists that she is evil. Do you think she is?
No. I wouldn't say she's evil.
She insists.
She's not allowed. She always tells me I'm not allowed to talk to other authors about her. She's terrified of that.
It's funny because I've met her several times. I've hung out with her at the bar at Worldcon, and she's like, no, I'm evil.
Yes, she's told me that too. I think she tells everyone that.
Very cool. Well, thank you for coming on tonight, and I wish you all the luck in the world. Everybody should go out and check out Hollow World. I know I've seen it on Amazon, and I've also seen it on your website. There's tons of links there. Go out and check it out and buy it.
Well, thank you for having me on.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal Irregulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.